When I sat down to write this sermon at the end of July, because I was going on vacation in early August. In fact, I just got back on Friday. And I didn't want this sermon hanging over my head while I was supposed to be relaxing. But as most of you know, getting ready to be gone can take a lot of work. It meant getting all my patient visits in before I left, writing up team reports for the meetings that I would miss while I was gone, cleaning the house, doing the laundry so we could at least pack, canceling the mail and the newspaper, and then throw in that my mother-in-law decided to visit the weekend before we left, and that my daughter was opening in a play. Somehow it didn't seem like I was going to get anything done, and I was frantically running around with my head cut off. The ironic part was the topic of the sermon, the busy trap. Now, you might laugh at that, but I suppose you can all relate. We're all caught up in the shoulds and the have-tos of what we have to do in our days, and it seems like we are watching our lives spinning wildly out of control sometimes. It leaves many of us feeling disconnected and dissatisfied because we're not living the life we want to live. Seems like everyone I talk to feels like this summer is flying by in a climate where we only get 4 months of decent weather. Our weekends get double booked with weddings and graduation parties and work picnics and yard and house projects. And we run into friends that we haven't seen in a while. We say, let's get together sometime soon. And by the time you get the calendars out, it may be 2 months before you can find an open evening where the two of you can actually go out and visit. Seems like at work we're all on overload. Many of us are doing our jobs and sometimes someone else's job because of cutbacks and the thinning of staff. More work is piled on fewer employees. And even at home, our kids are encouraged and often required to participate in sports camps and extracurricular activities that we're told are vital for our kids to be able to make the team or to be accepted into college. My daughter, who will be a senior this year, talks about how her friends often stay up until 1 or 2 o'clock in the morning on school nights studying because of their extra after-school activities and their job commitments don't allow enough time to get their studying done. It's not just us adults. We're teaching our kids to jump in line and get on the same treadmill. A couple of weeks ago, an article in the New York Times caught my eye. Our author, Tim Kreider, claimed that this crazy, busy existence that so many of us complain about is almost entirely self-imposed. I was surprised by this, and I wondered if it was really true. It seems like we're all so stressed out and have so much to do. Why would we embrace this cycle if it wasn't necessary? Kreider believes that this busyness has become something we collectively force one another to do. It's not like any one of us want to live like this any more than any one person wants to be part of a traffic jam or a stadium trampoline. But it's something that can easily happen and becomes accepted as the norm when all around us fall into line. Kreider feels that for many, this constant call of busyness is almost a boast quality to it. It comes disguised as a bit of a compliment. I mean, consider the opposite. What does it mean and say about us if we're not busy? Are we slackers? Are we not trying? What are we missing out? McDonald's played on that fear in a new ad campaign that was launched a few months back. Employees in a cubicle-laden office were glumly going about their day. Folks were sitting at their computers working through their lunch hours, some with no meal at all, or others with a sad-looking sack lunch. Suddenly, a woman stands up in her cubicle and says, "I'm going out to lunch. I'm going to take back the lunch hour and eat a real meal." And everyone gasped. And someone says, "You can't do that. We have too much work to do. We're too busy." "How would it look to the boss if you left your desk?" Suddenly another man stands up and says, "I'm going with you. I want to eat chicken, not be a chicken." And they boldly leave the office and walk across the street to McDonald's. Those left at the office stare in amazement, but also in fear, for what not being busy will mean about them and their work. With technology and a changing business culture, how we define work has changed dramatically over the years. Kreider wonders if this need to embrace busyness stems from the fact that very few of us actually produce anything tangible in our work anymore. Every day we process through so much information, moving it from place to place. What can we point to at the end of the day as our finished product? He wonders if this need to feel busy and to keep moving conceals the fact that what most of us do each day does not create real meaning for us in our lives. If we're not busy, we might actually be forced to face ourselves and our lives and what they mean in the absence of that busyness. Has being busy become a marker of our self-worth? If I'm busy, I must be purposeful, and if I'm purposeful, then I'm adding meaning to my life and to this world. But if this were really true, wouldn't we feel energized and enlivened by our busyness? Instead, many of us come to the end of our work week and we're exhausted, drained, and depleted. Now, I need to make a caveat here. These words come from a place of privilege. This angst about being busy that Kreider speaks about is in no way reflective of someone like the parent who's working two jobs to keep a roof over the heads of the family and food on the table. I would never suggest that that kind of busyness is self-imposed. Instead, I'm looking at the busy trap that many of us get caught up. It's our multitude of volunteer activities, our club commitments, work overloads, and the cultural pressures that make us think what we want is what we need. So the questions that intrigued me from this article are, who and what are we if we're not busy? Are we concerned if others see us as not busy, especially in the workplace or in places we volunteer? How would we see ourselves if we weren't so occupied? Buddhist teacher Pema Chodron says that we easily fall into the trap of unnecessary busyness to keep ourselves distracted so that we don't have to face our feelings. Kreider echoes this and wonders if our frantic days are really just a hedge against emptiness. Obviously, our lives cannot be trivial or meaningless if we're so busy. And so what would it mean if we were not? I'm intrigued by this idea of children's, that we distract ourselves with unnecessary activity to keep us from feeling. It may be easier for us to fill up our time with activities than to sit quietly and be alone with our loved ones, or worse yet, alone with ourselves. We say we long for quality time with our families, and yet how many of us race from workplace to extracurricular activity with our children eating dinner in the back seat of the van as we fly down the road to the soccer field, the Y, or school? Japanese poet Rokan says, "If you want to find meaning, stop chasing after so many things." Idleness is not just to be experienced on vacation. It is not an indulgence or a vice. It's as indispensable to the brain as vitamin D is to the body. And when we deprive ourselves of quietness and solitude, we suffer mental and physical affliction. For when we stop and pause and rest within ourselves, we are actually fueling ourselves. When we're constantly running and chasing and racing, we're only depleting ourselves. I read another interesting article that I have to confess frightened me a little bit. It was about the way the internet is actually changing our brains and how quickly we've become addicted to having to be in constant contact with our technology. I fear that this too is adding to our sense of busyness. We think that we're choosing to use technology, but according to a study at MIT, we're being dragged into it by the potential of short-term rewards. Every ping of our BlackBerry or laptop signals a possible social, sexual, or professional opportunity. Our brains actually reward us with a shot of dopamine whenever we answer that ping. And those rewards serve as jolts of energy that recharge our compulsion to keep checking, much like a gambler receives when a new card hits the table. Cumulatively, the effect is potent and hard for us to resist. Another study at UCLA showed shocking results of the Internet's effect on our brains. In study groups, two groups had brain scans. Half were regular Internet users and half were not. The half who used the Internet displayed fundamentally altered prefrontal cortexes in their brain scans. The Internet novices' brains did not. The novices then were told to use the Internet for 5 hours a day for a week and then return for another scan. Within just that 1 week, the novices had shown that their brains had been rewired, showing similarities to the brain scans of drug and alcohol addicts. This sense of urgency, this need to check our emails, Facebook, and Twitter is truly an addiction. And I believe a direct connection to this sense of busyness that plagues our lives. And yet, our workplace often demands that we spend hours on the computer, emailing and texting one another as normative ways to communicate. So how do we make our way out of this busy trap? We've all seen a million articles about how to simplify our lives or how to reorganize and cut out unnecessary things from our schedule. And I think all of those things are really useful. I think it's particularly important to intentionally turn off electronics at some point during the day and have a time when you're not connected. But again, the real question for me is, who are we? And how do we see ourselves if we're not in this busy trap? Can we be with ourselves and our loved ones in idleness? During summer vacations, I used to tell my kids that they needed to get bored. I found out when they really let themselves get bored, they actually began to come up with some really interesting and creative things to do and were much more engaged in what they were doing when they then, instead of allowing themselves to be lost in mindless video games or television shows. Crater cites his latchkey middle school years of having 3 hours totally of unstructured time each day to provide him with the model for seeking out his inner yearnings and desires. With the push and pull of our culture telling us what we deserve and what we need, it is sometimes easy to get caught up in all the things that we think we want but don't necessarily need. Of course, we have things we have to do each day. We have to go to work. We have to take care of our loved ones. We have to take care of our home. But what we want to do can get a little muddled and too easily influenced by our noisy and insistent culture. Perhaps a better way to filter out those things that are not necessary but entice us into this busy trap is to ask ourselves with full intention, what is it that we yearn to do? This type of question makes us step back and look at the bigger picture of our lives, and it speaks more to our authenticity than to just some activity that keeps us occupied. This type of question makes us wonder if the activity that we're doing contributes to the life we want to lead. What is it that we yearn to do? This is where we have to sit with ourselves and ask, what kind of life do I really want to live? And if we look at this question even deeper, for me it brings up the idea of having reverence for oneself and one's life. I wonder, how often do we see ourselves and our lives with reverence? By staying in the busy trap, we never have time to really confront that idea. The things that we choose to do outside of what we need to do should enliven and sustain us. And each and every one of us knows how that feels. When we have reverence for ourselves and our activities, our sense of time stops our minds are fully engaged, and our hearts are full when we're doing things that fill our yearnings for things like love and connection and creativity or justice. In contrast, busyness drains and depletes us, leaving us feeling numb and disconnected. Pema Chodron reminds us that instead of racing to the next thing, perhaps stop and step into that transformative experience when we simply pause instead of immediately filling up the space. By waiting, we begin to connect with the fundamental restlessness as well as a fundamental spaciousness. When we fall into the busy trap, we shut off that ability to open up to that spaciousness. What would happen if you chose to do less, to embrace idleness more, to turn off your phone and your computer during certain hours of the day, and just really be with your loved ones face to face, or just really be with yourself? I suspect really great things would happen. I suspect you might feel more connected to yourself, to your surroundings, and to your loved ones. Having reverence for oneself and what we do translates to reverence for others and for the world around us. When I think about all the recent gun violence that's been happening lately, I wonder if those who have had such anger and fears about others and themselves, they were ever encouraged to pause and cultivate reverence for themselves and for others around them. We may never know the answers to why those events occurred, but perhaps if we pause more often and recognize the wonderful gifts that we've been given, and like our reading suggested earlier, to give ourselves time to meet with the eternal light that shines in each and every one of us, perhaps fear and anger could lessen. Of course, we can't turn everything off all the time. We can't avoid the responsibilities we have with our jobs and our homes and our families. Only you know what it is that you yearn for and what you need to do. I can't tell you what to change or to add or to keep to your life. Kreider feels that the ideal human life lies somewhere in the middle. And only you know what that looks like for you. Most of you know that I work in hospice, and my patients teach me every day that we're not defined only by what we do at the office or things that we win.